want to know how far are you with the implementation of paper white paper 6. We want to know the progress that you are involved in as the DBD to make sure that every child is fairly treated in the system. Yes, there are issues that will need your response that have been raised by the determination of which I think will be taking care of them. And also, I think this policy that is being welcomed by everyone here, just to ask now, where are we and the expectations that we are hearing from all the organizations and the public out there to say, how far are we then in the vision and how ready are we as the department to make sure that this policy is well implemented for the benefit of those children that have been, let me call them vulnerable, or most of them have been disadvantaged for quite a long time. But really, we need to appreciate the good work and the good initiatives that we have just started. It's not that you have just started, that you are going on implementing the SWD to make sure that these learners are being treated for. Can I then hand over to you, DG, to lead us with your presentation? Then after that, honorable members and everyone will be allowing us to take a discussion after that, because we all want to go forward and provide. Thank you very much, DG. Over to you. I'm not sure, but yeah, then we have an opportunity.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, and ladies and gentlemen, Chair, we going to try to be as brief as possible. We have to give you a report of White Paper 6 of the progress that has been made over a couple of years. So we have to summarize that in about 15 to 20 minutes, which is almost an impossible task. But we'll try our best to do that. Let me start by appreciating very much also the opportunity afforded to us to come and appear before your committee, and also to, which I would call, share information with organizations that are represented here, and appreciate very much the wonderful work that they have done in different areas and so on. I must say that I always appreciate the dynamism and the vibrancy of the civil society of our country in different forms, and of course reflected in many organizations such as the ones that are here. Let me also note, need to appreciate what the former judge of our Constitutional Court, esteemed Judge Yakub, reminded us in terms of the history of this country with respect to inclusive education. Chairperson, ours is not a destiny when we deal with providing quality education. It's a journey. A journey encapsulated in the National Development Plan, which we very committed to pursue, and again acknowledging, as Judge Yakub indicated, that we remain committed to international instruments and protocols that we have signed, but also committed to realizing the provisions of our constitution. And this report will briefly provide that. I must also say that the minister and all of us before your committee on numerous times, we have acknowledged that we've not reached where we should be. We've made some progress. In fact, we departed by saying that we've had two Cinderellas in the basic education sector. It's inclusive education and schools that are located in the rural areas, and to be much more specific, your multi-grade schools. And we've said we've paid specific attention to them in the last 2 to 3 years. And ever since the minister declared 2013 as the year of inclusive education, we will share with you evidence of the work that we have done. And let me once again emphasize the point. We've not reached the ideal as yet. There are still huge gaps, are learners, who are of school-going age, who are supposed to be in educational institutions and who are not. But some of the figures that are bandied around are highly contested, contested even by SSA, contested also in terms of our own database. But nonetheless, let me request Dr. Simulani to share the report with the committee.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thanks, DG. Maybe to start off is to start by indicating the goal of the system of education, and that is it's to implement the policy in an integrated planning at all levels, which is enabled by working across multiple disciplines. I think that's critically important, and that includes NGOs, civil society organizations, and other government departments. On the question of improving access to education for children with special needs, we have statistics from STEP SA, starting from birth, categorized according to age ranges, which actually is an indication that there is progressive access to education, especially if one looks at the 7 to 15-year-olds. Up to 2014, the figure standing at 93.4 nationally, 93.4%, which is quite reasonably high. And then we also have got statistics in terms of access to education for children with disabilities in special schools according to per province, and then the breakdown of the different categories of disabilities that are accommodated within the basic education sector, the wide range of different disabilities that are catered for. And maybe just to add just one thing to say about the different categories, that the highest statistics is for children with intellectual disability. That is the disability with high statistical figures. Some interventions included strengthening of special schools and making special schools resource centers because of the expertise that exists in those that are previously well-resourced, and those are being targeted to be resource centers so that they can provide outreach programs to all schools within their districts. And also with regard to the progressive designation of public ordinary schools to full service schools and making them inclusive, we are closing, where we are at the moment, we are closing about 800 of those schools that have already been designated, with that being accompanied with support provided to them. There is budget allocation, for instance, when it comes to the budget that goes to special schools specifically, in the 2014-15 year, government allocated about 5.7 billion rand to 453 special schools. So that funding resource is made available. But maybe the question is, how is it being utilized? And then when it comes to the training of teachers, we provide, as basic education, various forms of training on inclusion. For instance, in disability specialization, for instance, training in Braille, training teachers in sign language progressively, and setting annual targets to that effect, so that we up the skill level of teachers to be responsive to learners when they engage with them through teaching. Maybe as an illustration on the question of quality of education for SNE, special needs education learners, what we have found as DBE is that for the special schools that participate in ANA, for instance, the performance in ANA in all the grades is higher than the results in a certificate. Because on average, for the past 3 to 4 years, special schools pass rate has been in the region of 85%. Those are actually large metric. So that's an indication that, you know, the quality of education that's provided in special schools in particular, or special needs learners, has progressively been growing. For instance, if you look at even the number of learners who write the National Senior Certificate has been growing over the years. For instance, in 2014, there were 1,320, out of which 308 achieved passes which qualified them for bachelor studies, 637 for studies for diplomas. And then in last year, in 2015, there were 1,691 who wrote, 443 achieved qualifications or passes that allow them to do bachelor studies at universities, 733 qualified for studies towards diplomas at universities or higher education institutions. Now, to take the question of providing quality education further, there have been developments at basic education. The first one that one is going to highlight on is the skills and vocational qualification and learning programs. At this point, 26 subjects have already been reaching, the skills and vocational qualification subjects have been reaching, which are going to be rolled out as a four-year program leading to a qualification at NQF level 1, and that is an equivalence of grade 9. We also are implementing the South African Sign Language. Having started in 2015, because for over the years, all the years up to 2015, learners who are deaf have never had access to their home language. Research has suggested that without a language, education is almost impossible. And that is why the progression and throughput rates of learners who are deaf in the system has been very poor over the past years. But now with a language of their own, which is also a language of teaching and learning, we believe that the quality of their education is going to improve. The implementation this year is at intermediate phase, grade 9 and grade 10. Now, looking at improving access to quality education for learners with visual impairment, here we are talking about the development, printing and distribution of webbooks in languages and mathematics for grades R to 9. They have been provided over the years to all the 22 schools for visually impaired. I won't go into specifics because every grade has had some provision, and these have come with some resource kits or toolkits to accompany and to make the usage of those workbooks effective. The workbooks need to be understood from basic education perspective. The provision of workbooks is a measure that makes up for the unavailability of textbooks in the meantime. Whilst textbooks are still reaching or being produced in Braille, we have the workbooks that are being provided to make up for that. There are also assistive devices and ICT equipment or technologies that are supplied to schools per province. The information is on the presentation, and I want to believe that the House has had a look at how far we've come as basic education to provide. And that also includes the Perkins Braille that Mr. Kumara, I think, spoke about. Strengthening of full service schools. I mentioned earlier on that we are almost at about 800 schools across the provinces who have been designated and are being resourced, and teachers are being capacitated. referred to, last year, DBE established a national training team that is made up of not only inclusive education or special needs officials, but officials from curriculum, officials from teacher development, officials from school government and management, because we believe that all those programs have a role to play in the implementation of CEO so that it is implemented successfully. So as we speak, the training has now been taken to the level of provincial departments, where each provincial department has submitted a plan in terms of how the CS policy is going to be rolled out up to 2018. So it's kind of a 4-year plan from 2015. There was mention of the discussion, the disability roundtable. I won't talk about that. DG has already alluded to that. The theme of the ministerial roundtable discussion was No Child Left Behind, as it was alluded to by Inclusive Education South Africa, and that we had about 54 civil society organizations that participated in that, and also including other government departments, because we are looking at making sure that we succeed in developing an inclusive system, and therefore we pull together every expertise that we can garner around the country and across society. Yeah, thank you very much, DG. And DG actually reminds me that we had even international experts who were invited to share their experiences and even how they experience the development of an inclusive system in South Africa from an international perspective. And I must say that South Africa has been commended, even from an international arena, in compared to countries within the continent, in terms of their drive towards an inclusive system, in terms of who we are. Well, challenges are there, and urgent steps are to make sure that the critical policies, strategies, and interventions that we have outlined and identified and prioritized as basic education are implemented going forward. For instance, the finalization of the civil vocational program and the development of the qualification has got to proceed. We are starting with a pilot of the 26 subjects in 58 schools of skill in 2017, so that the full rollout happens from 2018, as an example. So I would then move to the issue of funding. The issue of funding is one of the issues that has been mentioned and highlighted as a challenge. DBE has recognized that based on the legacy of the past in terms of where we are coming from, as the Honorable Judge has indicated that looking at where we're coming from a divided past, and that has also impacted on how schools were resourced. And it's a factor, and that has had a ripple effect. That is why most of the policies that DBE develops in terms of resourcing are actually poor to actually make sure that we address the issue of redress in terms of previously disadvantaged. So a model for funding has already been developed, and DBE is currently engaging in a costing exercise of the funding model, which will clearly stipulate how special schools will be funded in terms of non-capital, non-personnel expenditure. Also, the question of full-service schools. DBE has been criticized to say it goes ahead designating mainstream schools to full-service schools, but there isn't much mentioned in the way of resourcing those schools to put them in a privileged position for them to carry out the responsibility that is added to them. So we've got the model, it's being costed, and we've received a PPE, an invitation from National Treasury to submit a bid in May to look at how the funding model can be supported through government funding. And that is developed concurrently with human resource provisioning norms. How are we going to provide for psychologists, therapists, social workers? That is goes on. And that includes also the orientation and mobility instructors. It looks at deaf teaching assistants in the teaching of the South African Sign Language. All of those human resources are being put into a norming document so that it regulates how the allocation will be done, because we currently are sitting with disparities in terms of resourcing inclusive education across the provinces. So we need to standardize that process of providing resources, hence the development of the norms. Maybe just, I think without, I'm not too sure, I tend to be guided, it's a person. We have in this presentation responses to some of the findings of the Human Rights Watch. I'm not sure whether we need to go through them now or we'll address them at a dedicated session for discussion, both to the Human Rights Watch and, of course, to Section 37. The issue of high cost for education, it's still a question of funding. As a department, we have a policy. We have a policy on exemption of parents who may not afford to pay school fees. It's a policy that should be implemented across all schools. Therefore, parents who are in distress, financially and economically, have got all the right to apply for exemption to the school governing bodies. It's something that is being looked at. And of course, the funding model that has already been developed is also in part going to address these funding problems. With regard to issues of violence, abuse and neglect in schools, we have a problem. We have a program of safety and security in the schools, and the special schools also participate in the same program. It's a program for the Department of Basic Education, so it seeks to address those issues. But again, another effective response would be when the norms for human resource and support staff are finalized and are being implemented across all provinces, because they will begin to close the gap, for instance, in terms of the availability of appropriate hostel staff, hostel mothers, hostel fathers, because the norms are also touching on those in terms of how we're going to provide and to improve the quality of stay of our learners in hostels as well. Lack of quality education and transition to work we've mentioned the issue of quality education. We are addressing that through teacher development, continuous teacher development in Braille, in sign language, even in autism. We have an NGO that was granted funding by ECDP CETA to do a pilot training of teachers in autism, so that we can bring more and more children with autism into the system. And we also are collaborating with Department of Social Development, Higher Education and Training, Department of Labor, in respect of shelter employment for learners with disabilities who might not study further, but may look at deviating towards acquiring skills that can take them to a workplace. And of course, our skills and vocational program is also going to come in very handy, because it provides options in terms of choice, in terms of interest, and even in terms of aptitude. So it's not going to be a question of putting everybody in the same basket and say you are going to do an academic curriculum purely, and that's going to be that. So it's opening up, and it is in line with the introduction of the three-stream model that basic education has already started. Maybe just quickly, on availability of information, in response to Section 27 as well, about availability of information and statistics, we need to mention that as basic education, the collection of data on out-of-school children and youth is actually not within the competence of basic education. DG has already alluded to the fact that we rely on STEPFA to actually look at having access to that kind of data. And recently, we have engaged in a memorandum of understanding with Department of Social Development, Health, Home Affairs, SASA, and all of those to look at how we can access data on children who are out of school and children with disabilities. Accessibility of curriculum for visually impaired learners. The training in Braille of teachers is adding to that. Providing Braille equipment or Braille protection equipment, which is ongoing at provincial departments, is part of our efforts of addressing that. As well as DB has developed guidelines for adapting curriculum to Braille, especially making adaptations for learners who are visually impaired. Like the judge has previously has already indicated that we can't cover everybody with the same blanket, under the same blanket, or paint them with the same brush. There is differentiation, and differentiation is what we are institutionalizing as a system. And part of differentiation also speaks to specific guidelines that are relating to visually, the education of visually impaired learners in terms of building the capacity of teachers to be appropriately responsive in that regard. I won't repeat assistive devices and technology. Assessment and exams, one needs to indicate that teachers who are visually impaired are progressively being brought in to mark scripts, exam scripts, at the national senior certificate level for learners who are visually impaired. And those are teachers who have got knowledge in Braille, so that we avoid the continuation of moving from text to Braille and from Braille to text, because the issue of quality may come in the process of moving. That is why, as a department, we are progressively using teachers who have qualifications in Braille and are knowledgeable in Braille. These are just some of the examples of the web books being utilized, of course, in schools. These are some of the pictures which we picked up during the monitoring exercise of that. I think accessibility of infrastructure, maybe one should mention that in 2013 the norms for infrastructure were approved and they are being implemented. So there are targets that are set over the years, and those targets also include special schools that may have buildings that are not quite accessible. And those infrastructure norms are responding to what is referred to as the universal design principle for accessibility of all government departments. I think, Chair, maybe just to quote from the National Development Plan Vision statement, there are these statements: we, the people of South Africa, have journeyed far since the long lines of our democratic election on 27 April 1994. When we elected a government for us all, we began to tell a new story then. We have lived and renewed that story along the way. Now in 2030, and that is the vision, we live in a country which we have
remains. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, those are the presentations that we have received. Can I then open up an opportunity for discussions? Ask questions, I then quote every service. Or before I come to you, can I give a chance to... can I be reminded, I'm sorry for that, I'm so sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members and DG and Dr. Simonan for having us here to share the reports and presentations and discussions. Chair, one of the issues I'd love first to raise is around rail training. According to the many discussions that we've had with the Department of Basic Education, it appeared that as the national department, they cannot successfully facilitate training in schools. And that responsibility has been cascaded to the provinces to help in that respect. And we appreciate the fact that there are provinces that are quite adamant that they want to achieve something out of this. Chair, it is however concerning that there are provinces whose schools do not take this training very seriously. There are two reports that came in from the Eastern Cape. The first one alleged the fact that there were teachers in the training sessions who were coming in drunk. Now the question is, and this is why I have a problem with the department of, sitting here without these provinces, but I'm going to raise it anyway, is how, as the provincial department, as taking instructions from the DG's office, taking this training serious, or what? Are we really encouraging teachers to see to it that the training that they are undergoing is not only a way of wasteful expenditure in the part of provincial departments, because provincial departments are paying for this training to take place. And if they go there and achieve nothing, what is our way forward as the provincial departments that should resonate with the ambitions set forth by the national department? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much for raising that important point, ready for money. The other question that was raised by Dr. Simonan is to say, is the money allocated, the funds allocated, being utilized well? Because we do have funds that are being that is being allocated, but it's upon us as a civil community, it's upon you as DPE to make sure that we follow that money and make sure that it is utilized the way it is supposed to be. You need not to apologize for raising those issues. Those are the issues that you need so that you can assist us as we make a follow-up on those. As like the trainings in the Eastern Cape, now we've got a point to get in and see to it whether those trainings do, the teachers do benefit from them. Lovely, let me give you a chance just to come up with an open up to the honorable members.
No, Chair, I just wanted to ask whether we would like to engage with a discussion with the honourable members first, or whether we, and will we be given a chance to input afterwards? Okay, thank you very much.
Definitely, you'll be given that chance. Honourable members, let us engage. Let me start with Honourable Manjake. Honourable Khosa. Manjake. Khosa. Honorable Bosho, Honorable Basson, Honorable Gordon,
Jason. Thank you for the two reports, one from Human Rights Watch, Section 27 and DBE. Thank you for the progress made by the Department of Education as well. Mine are just a few comments, maybe, Chatterson. I'm happy that the Department of Rural-Based Education is engaging home affairs and social development in getting data. I'd also like to add, if they could also talk to local government, knowing that everybody now is going out door to door, doing campaigning for the elections. Each and every ward has got a councillor. If each and every councillor can make sure that from his area they write down everybody that is disabled and whether they are school age and sex, and forward that information to the Department of Education. Maybe that could also facilitate, especially in these areas where Human Rights Watch have not been, because they have been to some provinces and then they have not been to other provinces. I'm sure that information can also help. Secondly, Chairperson, with the budget that is available, I think also it would be appropriate if DBE could look into the radius of each and every school and make sure that how many disabled children are around, and then a support school can be some of the budget can be utilized in a particular school to make sure that it will cover some of the children that are disabled within that perimeter, so that the budget can stretch. Also, DBE, for those disabled children that are already completed and those that are about to complete, I think it would be appropriate if DBE can look into making sure that these children don't have to suffer in looking for work. They can automatically be placed. Already they are disabled, we shouldn't put more burden to them. And lastly, Chairperson, now that the gentleman spoke about teachers in the Eastern Cape going drunk to workshops, I think something has to be done, or maybe it's something that we need to debate about. The alcohol usage in South Africa is too high, and some of the disabled children, it happens during the fetal make of a child. Both fathers and mothers that are drinking, they are the ones who are creating most of these problems. That is why we're having these disabled children. Maybe that we can discuss in the house, Chairperson, so that something can be done in the manner in which alcohol is drunk in South Africa. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And I'm sure our organizations that are here are going to be correcting even the honorable members on the language. I know that you're very sensitive when it comes to the issue of language usage. I know there are ways where you don't want us to, you know, feel free.
Yeah.
We always forget. I can pick up some of the things. Feel free to correct that if ever you wish to. But as I'm saying, we're all in a learning curve. We are going to reach there. Thank you so much, Honorable. I hope everyone, DBE organizations that are here, you are even noting the questions and the comments, because you are still going to come in to respond and to respond to some of the things that have been raised. Honorable Kosa, before you come in, Kosa, our visitors, we do have something to drink here so that you don't get drowsy or bored or, you know, and dehydrated. Feel free of alcohol. Feel free to take something to energize yourself. Thank you. Honorable Kosa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I'll start by welcoming all the presentations. I would just very few issues to raise. The first one is on slide 9, page 5, the presentation by Dr. Melani. I wanted to check what informs those percentages in slide 9.
notice of those that are in a waiting list, and do you have information about that, and what are the plans to deal with such? Secondly, on the training of teachers to deal with learners with special needs, what numbers are you talking about? What is your target in order that we'll be able to achieve? And also for those that are being referred to by Section 27 as unqualified, who cannot read and write Braille, do you have programs to assist them so that they be able to assist our learners? Are they being responsive to your programs? Since we have them in the system, I think we need to check on those. Thirdly, it's on the children who were removed from the North Free schools to the free schools. I wanted to check with the presenter, were there reasons given? What are these reasons? Or has the DBEB been informed? And if they were informed, did they investigate, and what were the findings? Lastly, Chair, it's the lack of Braille textbooks vis-à-vis the first tender that is mentioned by Section 27. And what Dr. Smelane indicated, that we do have Braille textbooks. Can we be clarified in that regard? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Morning, ladies and gentlemen, and officials from the department, and the representatives of all the civil society. I want to appreciate the entire civil society to accept and say this year's policy is a good policy that has been established by the department, which indeed, when I go through it, it wants to assist the challenge that we are really facing. My question will be on the issue of conversation teaching. You said when you with your opening remarks, the state statistics there are contested. Why are they contested? What are the reasons behind the contestations? And with the issue of the funding, Dr. Smelano indicated that yes, funds are dispatched to full service schools and special schools. Are there any ways to monitor? Because you cannot just call money and you don't see where money goes. Are there ways of monitoring the things provincial and government? And sharing of information with the civil society. I don't think they would be here if there were ways where you share information. Are you sharing information with them, calling them, and talk specifically on the issues affecting them? And they raise concern and make input so that you can have corrective measures. The human rights and Section 27, they did speak about the issue of access in the school. They touched the issue of age. Do we have any policy or normal standard which indicates the age restriction based on special school and full service school? And lastly, we all have a role here, be it civil society, be it the department, be it government in general. What all of us, when you are making input, I heard one gentleman saying they want to make input, what is our, how do we contribute as the entire society in terms of making sure that the learners from the same challenged community are becoming experts and specialists? So there's this nothing for me without me. So, what are you, what am I doing to contribute practically to the running, to make sure that these schools do run as they are? I have heard one saying, these learners, they mark work for teachers because teachers are unable to read, maybe it will make braille. If we had learners who did this braille at the college, university, whatever, through the bazaars or whatever, we wouldn't be having this problem. What are we doing? What are we giving back as the entire society? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be straight to the point and blunt today because special needs education has been a sore point for many years now. We speak of 2013, the minister table this and the minister table that, and still we see nothing. And I think I'm on the same page as Section 27, Human Rights Watch, etc., etc. We speak of the science policy. It's good to have it gazetted, but it's not being implemented, and we know that for a fact. If you can prove to me that it's implemented on every level in every province, I'll retract my words. Another big problem is that educators are are deployed to schools, special schools, to full service schools, with no background knowledge, nothing whatsoever. This just shows that the department has absolutely no feeling for learners with disabilities. Textbooks, curriculums, the department doesn't even go out to these schools to find out what the needs are. These books are just delivered and the school must make do with what they get. If they do try and take it up, the department or the province just turns a deaf ear. Support staff, terrible, shocking. There are no support staff. Those that are there are not trained in the field, especially those in boarding facilities, especially class assistants. We should have class assistants that are called SASA therapists. I come from that background. These SASA therapists are invariably employees with a standard 7 or 8 or less. They also have no background on how to assist a teacher in a special needs school. Our support staff in hospitals, boarding facilities are also not trained. It is unfair towards them and towards the child. Psychologists, occupational therapists, school sisters, they practically do not exist. If you are a parent with a child with disabilities, you have to go to the department to see a psychologist. That's also very unfair. We've just heard the report that most of our children with disabilities come from the poorest of the poor. These people can hardly survive. They get to school, the school unfortunately has to say to the parent, I'm very sorry, you have to go to the department to get your reports so that we can assess where the child must be placed. They can't get to the offices. Transport, shocking. Our transport facilities are not geared to assist our learners. Many schools, special schools, have their own transport facilities. But it's also lacking because there's no teacher on these buses to ensure that these learners are not victimized. I had an oversight visit just the other day. We were at this school, Sakani and Bushcott Bridge. They were promised a bus, Chair. To this date, nothing has been received. School fees, everybody has alluded to school fees. We know that it's true, they are not exempted. If they apply for exemption, those learners are invariably victimized. Not the parents, the learner. Waiting lists. Waiting lists are terrible. Constitution says no child may be on a waiting list. I know the Western Cape has got a program, at least they are looked after. It gives the parent the opportunity to go to his or her work if their child is placed in a school, even though they might not be the right
education, maybe the other provinces should follow suit. We have a problem with 15-year-olds. If you're older than 15, or 15 and older, you go to a school with special needs, you are shown the door because you're too old. Subject specialists on provincial district levels are pathetic. If we go to the training report, total number of district officials targeted, 20. You can read it for yourself. Just go through. It is shocking. KZN, MP, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape is scheduled for later in this financial year. It's unacceptable. Cannot. We are lip servicing, colleagues. We are talking, but we're not doing. Full service schools. The teacher-learner ratio doesn't apply. You cannot have a child with a disability in a class and have the same ratio implemented as a normal child. Aftercare centres, unacceptable. There are practically no aftercare centres. And this is where the DBE must consult with social development to ensure that there are aftercare centres. What happens to a child that finishes schooling in a special school or in a full service school? There's no secure labour market for them, nothing. We are speaking, in this report of complicit in exclusion, South Africa was one of the first countries to ratify the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We ratified, we signed treaties, but that's where we leave it, and it's time we did something about it. We spoke about the US delegation that was here, and we're having this three-year collaboration. I'm not finished, Chair, we cannot be stopped. We are always stopped in exclusion.
But we can be stopped, honourable members, because we need to give chances to our
I need to say this. We have parents starting off care centres because there are not enough schools. It's not fair towards those parents. We have special schools, Dr. Similani alluded to it, participating in programs. My interaction with principals says they are inevitably left out. They hear of all the schools going to training sessions, participating in programs, then they hear of it 2 or 3 days later. And here we can see that National is out of touch with what happens on ground level. And then just the last thing, Chair. In 2011, the DA lauded the department with regard to the minister's commitment to fund the full budget of Pioneer Printers in Worcester, which at that stage stood at 7.3 million. I had an email and a discussion with Mr. Hichu just the other day. Not a cent was received, no assistance. Again, lip servicing with no implementation, and I ask that this be taken up seriously. Thank you.
Honourable Blossom. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, the presenter. Indeed, your presentation is well discussed. Thank you, Mr. Doc, with your comprehensive response. Chairperson, just allow me to say thank you for the chat. For adding this, that the whole background comes from the effect of apartheid in allocation of the resources, and those effects are still living with us, Mr. Judge. That means, Mr. Simelane, in the Dr. Simelane, sorry, in the land, we have a lot to do. To inclusive SA, it is true to remark about the Northern Cape. Northern Cape is the heart of the first lemma. And it is shocking that being identified that Northern Cape is the highest
single school that accommodates such learners on the area that are affected. I'm speaking about the Arlington, where the one route is, because it is through this raw favored constraint. Over this last weekend, Jefferson, the Minister of Social Development and the Deputy Minister were in Arlington for the province with the aim to transform or to rename the school over the stock to be an inclusive school as it is now, a sort of a skills center. The main thing that they have noticed is that more learners in Northern Cape are not learners. So it is an appeal from Northern Cape people that a full special school for learners living with disabilities should be built in the areas where they need it. Having one in Kimberley or a semi one in Kuruman does not accommodate the needs of them, of the people there. And now coming to these food service schools, I will appeal that these food service schools should be well monitored. First should be resolved. We must not just rename them and leave them here and leave them there. There are a number of food services that we visited and in our constituencies. Schools are named service schools, but according to the infrastructure, teachers being capacitated to be able to deal with these learners, it's not like that. And I always appeal that maybe results can be more better than you have alluded to, so if we can also assist these principals at full service schools to be able to register those learners during as learners that are having different challenges, so that when come the exams, if it is said stop writing, these learners should be given extra time because of their learning challenges that they have. So, let me stop there. Most of the points are covered with my points. Thank you.
So much, Honorable Mugodu.
Good morning, Chair. And thank you, colleagues, for the presentations. I think they were very enlightening, and they gave us the other side of the story. And I want to start off, Chairperson, by saying that every time in the portfolio committee we say that education, whether it's special or mainstream, is a societal issue. So we appreciate the efforts that you are taking in your own organizations at your own risk of resources and time to make sure that we are able to build South Africa together. Because really children belong to the nation, not to government alone. So I think the parents that are taking the initiative to set up centers and facilities that are able to impact on the work of government, implementing what government has seen fit to happen in the system, I think they must be commended. And we want, actually, as a portfolio committee chairperson, to push that more parents must take an interest in education, whether it's it doesn't matter whether it's mainstream or special education. So we really appreciate that effort, because government alone cannot succeed. And the department, I think we must also commend you for being implemented or put into place the policies and programs to make sure that to lay the foundation for this inclusive education to happen in South Africa. I don't want to do politics, Chairperson, but we have to really pat the department on the leg for the milestones that they have taken. And the DG was very emphatic to say that there are huge gaps and challenges. And we appreciate that part. And they have pointed out even in the report that where are the challenges and what is it that we can do to correct them. So the point that I wanted to raise, Chairperson, is to say that my concern relates to the issue of the schools. I see there that there are close to 800 full service schools that have been identified. I just wanted to check the breakdown per province, and also who determines that a school can be full service, or is it that ultimately we'll have all the schools becoming full service schools? What is the intention of the department? And I want you to link it to that point that said the department doesn't have a plan. If you can outline for me what your plan is. The other part, relating also to the issue of prioritizing the issue of inclusive education, I want to make a proposal to the department that they should start giving special attention or priority to this thing of special education in the same spirit as they have prioritized the program of ASIDI. It should be nationally driven. It should be made a special project that the department babysits in the same way that it is even able to, you know, have a target, and they are able to even report on milestones. I want to say this precisely based on the fact that there has been a screen that showed us the allocations per province and the uptake of the funds that are made available. And you can see that most of the provinces, they are not taking advantage of the existing resources to make sure that their schools are able to comply, or they are able to improve them, so that we are able to achieve our objectives, Chairperson. So that is the proposal. The other point is the issue of the take-up of the training programs that are there for teachers on programs of special education. I just want to check on the department whether there are specific incentives that you have devised that will attract the teachers to see those programs as things to do, because we all understand that there is, at times there are programs that people would not really easily take. But if we can have an incentive, at least they will push them to take them up. The other point related to the funding, Chairperson, that why don't we reinforce the funds for special education? As we allocate the norms and standards for provinces and schools, we should outline the percentages or the quota as to this amount should be reserved for this activity.
The maybe the last point, Chairperson, will relate to the model full service school that the department intends to see operating in South Africa. Are there any specific, is there a specific criteria that exists that outlines to us that if a school, is like this, it becomes a full service school? If it is like that, that school is just an ordinary school. Can you just outline for me that part, Chairperson? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbonto.
Okay, thank you. I think a lot of points was raised, but I think I don't think there's a lack of willingness from the department side. I think the lack is finances, and very often I feel with planning properly on finance, you've got to have people with a specific skills in that education sector to do the planning. And I say this in great kindness, that I, as a human being who has got no disability, can't necessarily plan because I don't really understand. And I think there must be a lot more engagement on the ground in that circumstance of the everyday life of a learner with disability to understand it properly and then plan accordingly. And I also do believe that any funding, and I know we say norms and standards goes to schools and they decide, or the SGBs or whoever, the fact of the matter is we have to change sometimes. And we have to say that norms and standards or any other grants specifically must be for specific dedicated items as prioritized by those institutions who teach us or accommodate in hostels and whatever learners with who's visually impaired or deaf learners. So I would like to comment on something that I saw last year. We finished our city school, Sedibeng in Lebalali, which is also a school for deaf learners, where Exaro Mine from Groot Geluk donated 27 learners each, a part of the IDEF program, and an amazing iPad to be taught on. And we have to go and look for those type of people who are involved. And I admire people sitting here, spending their lifetime to make life better for learners with such a disability. It always takes special people as well. But we have to find those donors and those big companies like the Exaros of the world. And I'm sure there are many more. I'm not saying they're the only ones. It's just one that I went to see. So to get over this hurdle of the tenders for LTSN, because, yeah, we heard about Pioneer. They, in fact, are a national asset, I believe, because they're the only company who actually do the big lettering, etc., 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 audio, etc., educational stuff. But there are other companies, too, who actually did get a tender, as was mentioned, and couldn't deliver on time. Now, you know, how do we select these companies or these service providers? Raise an eyebrow to me, because these aren't learners that's got the flu today and that they'll be all right tomorrow. This is their life. Absolute love. They've got no other choice. We've got to be very professional in selecting the right people to deliver the right tools to these learners. There can't be any other way of ensuring people should get the tenders only if they can deliver. Chairperson, there's a lot to say about hostels and things, and I was just wondering, while we are on this, I once made a proposal, for example, that the type of
electronic devices like iPads. I mean, it's very easy to a deaf learner, not to somebody who's visually impaired, but are we looking at that? Because I said then, and I said it today, again, say it again today, is that those learners are lacking behind when it comes to resources. So if they are in the numbers fewer, why aren't we starting the providing them? And what happened to that proposal last year? So I'll stop there, but I really feel that the planning, the finances, getting others involved, and really, really make sure when we give tenders to deliver, we give people who are able to deliver. This is not a book or a caps book you go and pick up somewhere else. It is a specialized tool that these special children need. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the questions and the input. Let me also add one or two questions. But before I get into the questions, I really we need to thank the organizations that are here and also the DBE. For me, to have so many organizations with such an interest, it shows that we are moving as a country. We are open up to such topics and discussions. DG, we are coming from an era where we grew up, where, as the judge has raised it correctly, so as to say, it was a taboo to some of the areas to even talk of children or people living with disabilities. Maybe we need to share these things. We are coming from the background where in our communities, even when you gave birth to a child with any kind of a disability, you had to hide the child so that other people cannot even know that you have given birth to such a child. Because even you as a parent were going to be discriminated. It was a sort of a case to be having such a child. It's worse when it comes to public institutions like this, where you would even sit like this and talk of such children. But today you are here, there's so much that has been done. So it's a little bit heartening and saddening to hear when we open such platforms, people will say there's nothing that has been done by the country. There's nothing that has been done by the Department of Education when it comes to such a topic. Really, it's very painful. I think when we started the meeting, it was on a very positive note to say, yes, we have challenges, and we all agree. But to say we haven't done anything, it's a little bit of an insult to everyone in the country, because it's one of the topics that are up there, and we're trying by so many, so much that we do something, we let everyone to be on the same footing when it comes to the issues of education. For me, really, I commend the organizations, because you are building on what is there, and you want to make sure that everything goes well for each and every child in the country. Same thing with Department of Basic Education, with the challenges that are there. But really, I can assure you, I can assure the nation, we cannot say there is nothing that has been done. So much has been done, but what we are here for today is to say, what best can we do to move forward, to tackle those challenges that are still there, quite a number of them, but together as we are here, this is the journey that we are starting. What is it that we are doing together to make sure that we tackle such challenges? Yes, there will be pockets of individual schools, individual areas, and this is a platform where we are saying, let us raise those issues to say, what is it that we can do to go to those areas, to those schools, and make sure that things are happening? I think that should be the spirit of our meeting, and so far as I'm hearing, that is what we are doing, and really, I think we should apologize for whatever comments that were a little bit out of the line of building when moving towards building the future for these learners, because what we are saying, let us build the future for each and every child in the country. Let us not have children that are disadvantaged even when living basic education.
I'm sorry, on a point of order, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I never said that the organizations, I was speaking to the department when I mentioned that nothing had been done.
That is what exactly I'm saying. There's so much that has been done by the Department of Education, even with the presentations that you are getting. We are here to say what is it that GPEU can do to do better and make sure that we take those challenges. But exactly this is what I'm saying, Honourable Members. My question that I'm interested in the numbers that everyone is raising, that's 600,000 children that are out of school. I know one member has raised it and that really is contesting it. Just to share the information, really, why there are two organizations that have raised the issue of 600,000. Maybe we're interested to know even the year that you think that was 600,000 and what is the progress after moving from that, and are we making any progress as a country, and also what South Africa and South Africa is coming with, because really the issue of numbers, I think we must be very careful moving forward and what is it that we are doing with that. Again, we're talking about the issue of regrets. Dr. Simelane, you have raised it very correctly in the funding that we are injecting to that. And as you have said, with the background that you are coming from, most of our areas, west and those deep rural areas, we have not been exposed to such things. I wish to know, even when you talk to the number of special schools, the distribution in those provinces, are we seeing all the corners? I know we still have a very limited numbers, but are we seeing any progress when it comes to, you know, addressing these issues in all the corners? How are these schools distributed? I'm talking about the special schools, because it's also of very importance to have this distinction, DG, of the special schools and the full service schools, and where do we draw the line? Because for me, it will also drive us to the issue of having our teachers being able to identify the identification of the learners that needs this special education, because as you have said, we do have learners, the fact, that are sitting there in those mainstream schools that have not been identified of the problems that they might be having, and we keep seeing them being pushed and pushed, and at the end of the day, they are not benefiting anything from the education. So that area of identification, that will call for each and every teacher in the system to have the knowledge, and that, you know, that training is to say, what is it that I see that this learner is not capable and he needs, or she needs that special training or special kind of education that can be needed. Okay, let me stop there for now and allow the department and the organizations to respond and have a view on what honorable members have raised. Then maybe we just take very few the follow-up questions, then we come to the resolutions and the conclusion of the meeting. Okay, CBE will be the last one to come in when it comes to responses. Let me see the indication, all the organizations around, they want to talk. Let me start with the lady from, is it Brain South Africa?
Flying
South Africa. Then come to you.
Madam Chair, thanks for having us here today. It's a great privilege. I just want to comment on, firstly, on thank you for the adaptation that the DBE are making. I can see it in helping learners with that are adults and they're writing the grade 12 exams, and I think the DBE is doing a wonderful job there. Thank you for that. I'm also worried about the Braille exams for teachers. I know of teachers that going for their third time and they're not passing their exams. I'm very what's the word? Impressed with the policy that Botswana is following. If a teacher in a school for the blind is not interested in writing exams or doesn't want to learn Braille, they are being posted back to a normal school. And then there's another thing. I was so privileged to be in a school where I had all the advantages. I have all the assistive advices because I'm white. But I also have black friends that were in schools that were less disadvantaged policies. And they even admitted to me it is worse than ever before now at this stage. And then I want to know, in 7 years ago, he started for hearing, she's an ex-principal of principal school. She brought out a report, and it was an excellent report, just like Section 27 is written now. And actually, the department asked her to visit all the 22 schools, and she said, I want to know, why wasn't that report not followed up? Thank you.
No, I was trying to find out what the report is about and whether it was, but it's fine, we'll talk about it later. Can I come to you, then? The ones are hands at the break, and then... Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Just in terms of that number, to give you the source of it, it is actually 597,953 learners. It comes from page 18 of the Department of Education's report, in table 15, and the source, as they quote here, is DBE calculations made from statistics in the GHS and annual school and annual special school surveys of 2012. That is a Department of Education statistic that we're quoting from the implementation report. And again, we acknowledge that underneath that there is a very good summary of by the department saying that if we are indeed looking at this number of learners who are out of school, the option of building special schools to accommodate them is really not feasible because we would require something like another 2,300 special schools. So just going back to Honourable Basson's point about Uppington and the learners there and requiring a special school, if that is not an option, we would certainly urge the department to look at capacitating the full-service schools within the provinces and even the ordinary schools. So it brings us back to this issue of teachers developing the skill to accommodate learners with higher levels of support needs in their classrooms. And that does seem to be a recurring theme that many of the members have addressed. And again, I think, Honourable Basson, you mentioned registering learners for support, and I think that's a very important measure that can be taken, and I know some steps have been taken towards that. We have schools that have been punished as poor performing schools, that school in the Northern Cape that I spoke about, because their honest results are poor, but it doesn't take into account that 30% of their learner population has fecal alcohol spectrum disorder. And that is so for many of the ordinary schools in our country. They're not acknowledged for the fact that they are accommodating and supporting learners who require concessions or who are not on the same cognitive level as their peers, but are still being are still accessing learning in those schools. And it provides a big disincentive for schools to support learners if they are going to be punished as poor performing schools because of their results, and that those learners cannot be registered as learners who are accessing support within the system so that those results can be excluded. And just in terms of the point of collaboration with civil society, many of the members have mentioned that, and we would agree. You'll find that the majority of skills and expertise around inclusive education and disability persons exists within civil society, and so again, we urge much stronger collaboration. Often we find that we are excluded from information, and we are most certainly excluded from funding opportunities. And so, I mean, it's the Ministerial Advisory Committee on Special Education Needs that Ms. Mweli mentioned, we would love to know if civil society is represented on that advisory committee and who is representing civil society. It would certainly be an opportunity, I think, for civil society to have a voice in those forums, and we would certainly welcome the opportunity to do so. Yeah, thank you.
I'm from the Humber Foundation. Thank you very much to everybody for convening this meeting. I commend the Department of Basic Education for your May 15 report, which is a fantastic report on the state of the affairs in the department, with some very, very good recommendations. I'd also like to commend this committee for inviting Section 27 Inclusive Ed alongside Human Rights Watch to come and present today. If I may follow up with my colleague who's from Inclusive Ed regarding the statistics, I can add some more to that. The 2013 statistic from the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities was 535,000. The 2011 Department of Basic Education statistics was 590,000. The Department of Basic Education in 2010 was 467,000. I think that there is a consistency over a vast number of years that reflect these statistics as reflective of the population at the moment. And so I would like to question why these statistics are being so vehemently questioned. It is not a reflection on the work of the Department of Basic Education that this is the historical legacy that our country has. These are two profoundly different things, and I think it's important to acknowledge the scale of the problem in order to include everybody that's needed to address this in a systematic issue. And so this is a commendation of the Department of Education to be so brave as to acknowledge in writing that these are their statistics. The one question that I did have relates to parent-initiated centres. Parent-initiated centres are a fantastic support, but they should not be the solution. Parent support centres provide an amazing service, but these are parents and not educators. One of the last elements is that in the Department of Basic Education's 2015 report and their recent report now, there has been a consistency of a lack of growth of the inclusion of children with disabilities on a base at ECD level. This remains officially at 43.7%. If children with disabilities are not being included at ECD level, they will struggle to be included in any of the schooling systems that we've mentioned. And I'd like to support all of the colleagues here around from the civil society for our role in this, but I'd strongly encourage the Department of Basic Education to facilitate more support for formal ECD centres and to acknowledge the fact that there is such a backlog for the parent-initiated centres that are filling in a stopgap that shouldn't be a final solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I just want to highlight the position of children with profound to severe intellectual disability. As a result of the court case in 2010, a decision in the Western Cape, which resulted in a court order, certain progress has been made for children with severe to profound intellectual disability in terms of establishing therapeutic teams, program implementers, etc. The concern is, going forward, is that such initiatives should not be as a result of a court order. It harks back to the basic constitutional rights. I think we've quoted the judge very often, but it is a fundamental right. So just raising the concern that development should not be as certainly in the case of children with severe and profound intellectual disability, should not only be as a result of a court order, and that it needs to progress beyond the boundaries of Western Cape province to a national level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairperson. Just to concur with my colleagues that the statistics that we're using are from the Department of Education itself. It was wanted to check if there has since been a revision or if they have updated statistics that we can share, which is really also supportive voice that came from the Honourable Member about the need to be sharing information in terms of the
Okay. Thank you very much for giving us an opportunity to speak again. The first thing that I want to say is that, along with my colleagues on the Western Cape Intellectual Disability Forum, we'd like to say that the reason why we are here as civil society is because we do believe in democracy, and we believe in the project that you were talking about of improving education for each child in South Africa. And when we make criticism of the Department of Education, and we do it here because of the fact that we believe that this is the appropriate place to do it. And we want this engagement to result in clear action, and I'll come to the clear action that we want to request from the Portfolio Committee when I close up. But the first thing that I want to point out is that I've taken some interest in the Portfolio Committee's meetings over the last 5 years and in the minutes from those meetings. And as comprehensively as the Department of Basic Education makes its reports every single time, unfortunately the reports have a certain repetition to them. And the repetition is that they report statistics which out of context indicate statistical improvements which in reality are not felt by schools. And I'd just like to quote quickly, because I think it's important, from why we might have a different opinion to the Department of Education. It's from a constitutional court judgment. And the constitutional court says this is what we should be aiming for when it comes to education. It says it may not be sufficient to meet the test of the constitution to show that measures are capable of achieving a statistical advance in the realization of a right. Furthermore, the Constitution requires that everyone must be treated with care and concern. Everyone. If the measures, though statistically successful, fail to respond to the needs of those most desperate, they may not pass the test. So as an organization that represents what our Constitution says, as we know the Department does, we don't think that we can be reporting statistical improvements, whether it's 600,000 children or 500,000 or 100,000, those are a lot of children being left behind. And we cannot accept that this is the case, and we cannot accept that the rights in our constitution allow for this to happen. The Department of Basic Education, in the same report it's tabled now, says that many special schools, and I quote, are effectively daycare centers with little attention being given to ensuring that learners have access to the curriculum. Now that is, again, something that we as a country, not Section 27, or civil society, collectively cannot accept. So, what am I suggesting there's one specific point that I'd like to respond to. I would like Mr. Simelane to not talk about workbooks, but to respond directly on the issue of textbooks and what the department is doing to produce Braille textbooks. To our knowledge, the Department of Basic Education has not produced a single CAPS curriculum textbook in Braille, even though CAPS has been rolled out since 2012. We commend the department for workbooks. The schools appreciate the workbooks and the schools benefit from the workbooks. But this increases the need for textbooks. It doesn't decrease the need for textbooks. So we'd like Mr. Simelane to respond. But as far as what we want to ask the Portfolio Committee to do, we would like the Portfolio Committee to table within Parliament as a whole a crisis in inclusive education in South Africa. We would like the issue to be raised outside of the Portfolio Committee because we don't believe that the government as a whole acknowledges, understands, and is responding to the crisis of whether, as I say, 100,000, 600,000 children with disabilities not in school. Secondly, we would like these meetings and presentations to happen more frequently and for civil society to be included more frequently. We will suggest, although obviously we cannot dictate, that quarterly reports from the Department of Education happen to the Portfolio Committee on responses to the Human Rights Watchers report and on to responses to Section 27's report and inclusive education of South Africa's submission. Thirdly, as was raised by my colleague in Chaveni from SABA, we would like to have the provincial and national executives in these report back sessions. The reason why is that in our engagements with the Department of Education, the national department, we sympathize with them that often information is not provided by the provincial executives, and the provincial executives do need to be held into account, and Mr. Simelane himself cannot be held responsible for every single thing that goes wrong. For example, a drunk teacher coming to a training session in the Eastern Cape. Then, fourthly, in order to capacitate these departments, the provincial departments, the National Department's report notes that in the 6 provinces that bothered to provide information to the National Department, there are 231 vacancies in the Inclusive Education Director. upwards for the 9 provinces means that there's probably close to the region of 400 vacancies in inclusive education directors. Since I don't have access to the organograms of these departments, I can't tell you what percentage of positions that is, but it must be a very large percentage. We would like the portfolio committee to call on the provincial departments of education to, as an urgent priority, fill these positions because they cannot possibly support the teachers and principals at schools if there are no staff in the departments. And finally, and very urgently too, White Paper 6 for Inclusive Education, which is a brilliant quality document and internationally respected, is supposed to be aiming between 2000 and 2021. Unfortunately, we are now in 2016, and we're closing in on the closing date of it. Firstly, we'd like to know what the legal status of White Paper 6 is. The judge of the High Court has said that it's just a document, like any other document the government produces, and it's not binding. Secondly, we'd like to know what comes after White Paper 6. And the reason why we're bringing this to the Portfolio Committee is we'd like to know whether or not there is a possibility of discussing a new policy or framework legislation to improve the lot of children with disabilities in South Africa. So all of these things that we've asked, we think, are well within the competency of the Portfolio Committee. And I know I don't only speak for myself, but the rest of the civil society organizations here, that because we believe in democracy and because we want to support the Portfolio Committee, we would be happy to do anything within our power to support the Portfolio Committee in taking these actions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the input. Can I then hand over to UD? Okay, before UDG, Great South Africa, can I give you an opportunity?
Sure, thanks. I was waiting eagerly to hear from my colleagues whether they would respond to some issues that were raised by members of the committee that raised questions. I felt I must address it before the DPE responds. Chair, on the issue, first I must acknowledge the fact that the committee seems to be very much insightful of the issues education. And it is really inspiring, I mean, particularly to me. I thought they might not understand as why a school of disability as I hear them now. Chair, on the issue that was raised on the tender was not given to any particular organization, Chair. Just to share information so that we are on par. The tender was given to various organizations who agreed to form a consortium because of the stringent terms that were embedded in the tender system itself. The tender required the organization that takes up the tender to do virtually everything which was impossible as per the expertise of various organizations that produce braille in South Africa. For example, Pioneer Printers is expert when it comes to technical braille. They produce mathematical braille, they produce music braille. There's an organization up north in Johannesburg that produces, that's Vanity, that produces content in African languages and other languages in Africa, and English and Afrikaans. And quite a number of others wanted to come in with the various expertise that would have been embedded in the tender process. But unfortunately, according to what the DBE wanted, this would have not been feasible because of the fact that they wanted one structure to take on everything, and that was impossible for the producers of Braille, since they achieve in terms of the difference between the price of a Braille production, sorry, of a Braille book and then an electronic Braille book. That's it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. We are not doing everything. DBE, DJ, can I hand over to you?
Chair, thank you very much. Let me, as always, appreciate and welcome the comments and questions raised. And I can only commit once more that we'll continue to do our best because we have no choice. We serve the general public of South Africa. That we must respond and respond urgently to all the issues that have been raised. Chair, but let me start by saying, one, we work with the broader public, the entire public, the entire civil society. When we put out advertisements for even roundtable discussions, we invite organizations that you know that do exist in South Africa and are active in the space of the assignment that we are dealing with. But we are free to work with all organizations, and I'm sure Dr. Simulani is here, the colleague from Inclusive Education South Africa will help to take a contact detail so that now and again they are also included. We are prepared. We don't have all the answers to everything. In fact, we get quicker and better to the answers when we work with people who are in touch with some of the issues. That's why we even draw from the international community in dealing with some of the issues that we've already reported on. However, Chairperson, it is extremely unfortunate that I'll have to say it here. I can't dictate to an organization on how that organization must carry out its business. I can't. And how people do that to us and even tell us how some of our line functions should operate, I find it extremely unfortunate. If it comes as an advice, I take it. But if you say, this is what this line function must do, then it's something different. But I'll also have serious difficulties, Chairperson, if organizations that are here are giving us certain instructions. I don't take instructions from organizations. I take advice from them. I've got a line function that I'm taking instructions from. And I'll have serious problems if the portfolio committee is also used to dish out instructions to us. And I know that the portfolio committee will not allow that to happen. If concerns are raised, if gaps are identified, we are willing to address them, but I don't take instructions. And I can't issue instructions to other organizations other than the organization that I'm part of and within my line function. And I thought that it's important for us to sort that out. I'm happy, Chairperson, that you have indeed addressed some of the issues that were of concern to me. You know, we will differ. We'll differ on some of these things. But the key question is, let me deal with the issue of the contested spends. When I engaged with the statistician general, he said to me, you need to be cautious of the spends that you are referring to because it has its own limitation. It's limited to a high household survey, in which case, by its very nature, it's got a very narrow scope. The number can be more or less, the number that you are putting to me, it could be less. But I have said, even in my opening remarks on the same issue, that it doesn't matter whether it's 400,000, 500,000, 600,000. The key question is, there are learners who are out of educational institutions. And this is an issue that we need to address. And this is an issue that we are concerned about. Unfortunately, as Dr. Zimelani correctly affairs, we are involving social development, we are involving other departments to help us to narrow this almost to zero because it's an issue of concern. Even if it would have been one, it would be one too many. All learners of school-going age must be in education institutions. And I'll move off that one. That's why I said this number is even contested by people who gave us the figures. And they said to us we must be cautious, but nonetheless, that's not the main issue. The main issue is to make education accessible to all learners in this country. And I agree with Section 27. We shouldn't be, bogged down around those figures. Chairperson, Honorable Majeke, just gave us comments and advice, and we welcome them, want to appreciate them. It's a pity that she's not here, but we appreciate very much the comments that she made, and that we can improve our statistics by even engaging local government. We appreciate that very much. The issue of slide, Honorable Khoza, slide 9, page 5, I'm sure Dr. Simrani can respond to that and tell us how we work that figure out together with the SA. Training of teachers in terms of targets and so on, I'm sure Dr. Simrani could also give a response to that. Learners were removed from Northeast schools. Let me just explain the issue of the Northeast schools. My own understanding of this is that particularly special schools had their own special funding arrangement, which was different from your public ordinary schools. And that's how they came actually to be excluded to the policy of the Northeast schools, because they had their own funding regime. The unfortunate bit is that it also varied from one province to the other. And that's why we are bringing in national norms and standards for an inclusive education system, which is a document that has been developing for the past two to three years, and we're moving towards finalizing that now. And I just thought that this bit of history, it's actually important to understand the issue. They were not deliberately excluded. I've been an HOD in the Northwest Province. I know that we used to give money to them before the Northeast schools. It used to be perceived as more favorable because they were even treated as your self-managing schools. You transfer to these schools and then they disperse the financial resources. But we are reviewing that through the national norms and standards to make sure that they are better and fully funded. Lack of Braille textbooks, let me also indicate that the Department of Education facilitates the procurement of textbooks through the development of a national catalog. We don't produce textbooks. Publishers produce textbooks. What has also happened is that we discovered that many publishers were not keen to really participate in textbooks that require Braille. For the simple reason that they were of the view that producing textbooks in Braille is too expensive and then they don't really get value for money. We have engaged them. And I think the explanation has also been given by the colleague. We have engaged them, and I think many of them have now agreed to at least make a master copy readily available in the textbooks that are selected, because it's not all textbooks. We bring, the schools for blind learners around, they select, and then that constitutes their catalog, and then we take it to the publishers, and the publishers then take it forward. And I think until only recent did we get publishers, committing to making these textbooks available. We procure what is available. Production is the responsibility of publishers. DBE or provinces do not produce textbooks. The publishing industry that produces textbooks, and we succeeded in prevailing on them in making these textbooks available. even though funds are appropriated, especially funds that are appropriated through equitable share, it is the responsibility of the provincial executive to appropriate to various departments. Even DBE cannot dictate that so much must go towards this. We can only recommend. It is the responsibility of the Premier and the Executive Council. Sometimes money that we recommend must go to education is taken to roads. Sometimes it goes to public works, like money that was allocated for the strengthening of special schools when I was still in the HOD in the Northwest. In provinces such as the Eastern Cape, that money landed in roads instead of going to learners with special education needs. So provincial executive councils, chaired by the Premier, decide where the money ends eventually. And I'm happy, Chairperson, that you have organized a meeting involving DBE and provinces so that increasingly we converge on these things. That provincial education departments must take the responsibility and provincial executive councils must appropriate money where it should go when the national policy has identified that money must be directed to a particular area. Well, unfortunately, I found myself extremely shocked today with what Honorable Boshoff said. And maybe it's safe not to comment because you have correctly commented. Even organizations that are here have acknowledged. I mean, one of the things that Honorable Boshoff is saying that yielded to nothing since 2013, the CS police. You know, the curriculum for South African Sign Language, which was gazetted in 2014. It followed from 2013. The number of teachers were trained since 2013 and so on. And we presented this report to your honorable committee here. We went out to you, to some of the provinces and visited. I'm shocked that Honorable Boshoff is saying 2013 was followed by nothing. But thank you very much. I'll leave it there. Honorable Basson, I think you've raised the issue of the need. Some of the organizations concur. Indeed, we have to make sure we move with speed and reach out to these learners who require, you know, to be covered in terms of access. And, of course, the issue of the Northern Cape, we discussed it with them. One of the things that we'll recommend is that in schools that you are building, learners with special education needs must now be prioritized, especially in respect of these learners that you are seeing are out of school. Some of the provinces have moved, have built a couple of schools. I can't just remember which ones. In future, we can bring you the list to show you that provinces are indeed taking this serious. As a matter of fact, CEM said inclusive education must feature on its agenda quite regularly. And therefore, this is taken quite seriously. Honorable Mokoto, I fully agree with you that education is a societal matter. That's why we appreciate if various organizations take us on these issues, keeping us on our toes. It's our job to make sure that we deliver on these things and constitutional imperatives of the country. That we appreciate very much. We don't take umbrage about that. How do we determine, I'll leave that to Dr. Similani, full service school and special school. Prioritizing inclusive education, that's why Treasury has now invited us to meet with them to present the new norms with a view of finalizing this by May so that at least we know again. And let me say, in the past, money was sought to implement a program called the strengthening of special schools. And when I was in the Northwest, we bought minibuses for schools, for special schools in the Northwest. And we visited each one of them to make sure that they don't even experience problems that are related to transport and make money available for learners to be picked up wherever they might be. If they have to go home, those that are staying in the hostels, those expenses were borne by the department. And again, we'll make sure that this money which will come through norms and standards will be earmarked funds and these funds will be protected like it happened in strengthening of special schools. training program for teachers, I said Dr. Simulani will address that. Honorable Van der Walt, as I've already indicated, in part you are right, it could be lack of funding, but I've already demonstrated that in some provinces, money which was allocated for this purpose was not used for that purpose, but it was used for something else. Well, Honorable Van der Walt is saying we might have to consider conditional grants. Maybe we have to go that route. We might have to do that and maybe consider, allocating them as conditional grants. Maybe it could be another new that we might have to consider. Provision of ICT, Operation Pakiza, and I'm sure that will be presenting to you very soon. The minister said the first schools that must benefit from Operation Pakiza are schools of learners with special education needs and multi-grade schools. And that is a recommendation that comes from you, Honorable Van der Walt. And we're looking forward to implementing that. That schools of learners with special education needs will be among the first cohort of schools that will benefit from this, including multi-grade schools. Chair, the Honorable Gina, I'm sure I've responded to the issue of the figures, and then the rest of Dr. Simulani will respond to. And then I've also responded to some of the issues that were raised by the organizations that are sitting on my side. But let me also say, ECD, basic education is responsible only for grade R if we talk about ECD. And in terms of conception to 4 years is the responsibility of social development. And basic education is responsible for the development of stimulation programs, which is now the national curriculum framework that we are implementing for 0 to 4 year old, if you like. The training of practitioners, those are the responsibilities of basic education. But in terms of the institutions, if you like, and so on, is the responsibility of social development scheme. That includes even the extra 2 years. We're still not responsible for the running of the institutions, the funding, and so on. We're working very, very close with them, and I'm quite optimistic with the latest policy and strategy that Cabinet approved that we should be seeing better things taking shape in early childhood development. Chair, if you allow us, let me also say, but I know that Dr. Simulani was going to cover that. White Paper 6 is a policy of the department, and it would remain a policy. It's not regulation, it's not a legislation, it's a policy. And it's a very important policy that has taken us from where we were before to where we are now. So that is the status of White Paper 6. We're not considering to come up with a new policy altogether. We believe that we need to come up with instruments that will give expression to the policy intentions of White Paper 6. And as many organizations indicated, there's nothing wrong with this policy. All that we need to do is to make sure that it's implemented in full. Okay. Can I request Dr. Simulani and maybe Mr. Subban, if you allow me, just to say what?
I am going to allow Dr. Simulani and Mr. Subban. But I was very interested. It's nice, honorable members and colleagues, to be seated here because you can look even at the reaction of people as others are speaking. I have to raise this issue. When we are raising the issue of publishers, who were not keen to produce brain books because of cost and whatever. It was very interesting to see the reaction in the face of most of our organization. For me, it's difficult to say why is it so. You know, there was
was a lot of reaction, others shaking their heads. Then he said to me, I cannot leave that one without it being clarified and reaching to one conclusion and one agreement and one understanding of what is happening around the issues of brain books being produced and together. But I could feel that from the response that we were giving, it was not something that various organizations was agreeing with. I would open up to that, but let me allow Dr. Sumidan to speak to it. I just want them to be able to talk about it, because I could see the reaction. It was not it. I don't want us to finish the meeting and afterwards we're saying we got the responses and the discussions were not up to what we need to agree upon. Dr. Sumidan, can I hand over to you?
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and of course our colleagues from civil society organizations for comments and questions. And maybe just in my response, I wish to start by saying that our success, the success and the failure to make inclusive education work in South Africa is dependent on all of us. It's actually dependent on us as the South African society. We've got different expertise, different resources from different parts of our society, and therefore it's a question of how we pull those resources together and take resolve in moving forward. So therefore, it's just an appeal to say we need to, in our approach, begin to consolidate whatever gains we've made and make resolves in terms of what we need to take forward as a collective. I think that's critically important. Maybe to look at some of the questions, fortunately DG has addressed many. I won't have to be specific. Maybe to start with Honorable Closter on the question of the percentages or the statistics of the 17 to 15 year olds in terms of what makes up the statistics. This is the statistic of 7 to 15 year olds within the compulsory school going age who are accessing education in education institutions, because that's how SSA collects the data. It's not saying in schools specifically, but in education institutions. So it looks at the population, the total population of 7 to 15 year olds, and then convert that and look at those who are in education institutions accessing education, convert that to a percentage of the total population of those children. Obviously, it will include even children who are in waiting lists because they are not within the records of the schools yet. For instance, the 6.5% who are not of 7 to 15 year olds who are not receiving education will include, of course, those in waiting lists. That's our understanding from the general household survey. And as DG mentioned, these are aggregations and estimations, because general household surveys are not a census. And that's where the issues of the quality of data, you know, needs to be cautiously approached. And again, if you deal with statistics on disabilities, the question comes down to assessment, expertise to assess the disabilities and to determine without any reasonable doubt as to who falls within a particular disability. And that's the expertise that is not quite quite available in our country. So that is why the issue of statistics may always be contested. But as the point has been made, it's not about the statistics, it's about making sure that every child receives education. And then the training of teachers and the numbers here, DBE has actually set a target to say all teachers, particularly in special schools, because of the specialized skills that they require to teach in those schools. DBE has set a target to say, initially the target was set in 2011 to say by 2014, all teachers in special schools, be it in special schools for visually impaired, special schools for the deaf, etc., will have to be trained and given the required skills so that they can operate maximally and teach effectively. So the target is to make sure that every teacher in a special school is given the requisite skills, ultimately. Honorable Mguni, about the question on the policy on age, from NEPA, the National Education Policy Act, it does make a provision and gives minister the mandate to determine an age of admission for children with special needs to receive education. And that then DBE has started responding to that mandate by looking at amending the legislation, as well as, of course, some of the policies, including the admissions policy. For instance, we've identified three critical disabilities, and that is blindness, deafness, and autism in particular, whereby children who are born with these disabilities need to access education as early as age 3. But it has not yet been finalized and consolidated, and the policy has not yet been promulgated again. But there is work being done in that regard. Honorable Boshoff, about the implementation of CF in particular, and I think that is going to address quite a number of issues, including the issue of the waiting list, of children in the waiting list. The CF policy is implemented in phases. The implementation period is 2015 through to 2018 to have covered the entire system and to have covered all the teachers within the system. And of course, the accompanying professionals like psychologists, therapists, etc., to be trained in this so that they assist the department in the identification of learners experiencing barriers to learning, and also to get a sense of how many learners fall within which kind of disability, and therefore how as a department we respond to that. So I think it might still be early days. I mean, in 2016, we still have to go up to 2018, because it's quite a big task. And again, what is limiting progress in the implementation of the CS policy is that it requires your non-teaching specialist professionals whom we don't have as much as we would have desired as basic education. And that is why in the implementation of CS, right from developing the policy up to the point that we started the implementation, we've been working with social development, we've been working with the Department of Health, because they would have these professionals whom we require to assist in the implementation. So it's a joint effort. It's not something that we are doing alone as DDE, because we don't have all the necessary skills and expertise. And maybe that is why we might see the progress as being somewhat limited and not as feasible as we may have desired. But the plan is going up to 2018. It's a progressive implementation of the policy. Maybe just to add, DG has already addressed the issue of transport. Provincial departments are buying, as much as we are aware, and the reports that we are getting, most provincial departments buy transport for special schools. I'll make an example. In 2009-10, the KZN Department of Education bought 50 buses just for special schools. And those buses were adapted and modified to be able to carry learners with disabilities. That is an example. And last year we got a report from Limpopo about minibuses that the provincial department has bought for special charter schools. So it's a progressive response to the challenge of transport, etc. And then with regard to hostels, the conditions, and the staff, the support staff in general, it's all built into the human resource provisioning norms. DG talked about the norms for resourcing an inclusive system. The norms are approached from three perspectives, from funding and from allocation of human resource, that includes the support staff. As I mentioned in the presentation, also critical human resources such as orientation and mobility instructors, deaf teaching assistants for the implementation of sign language. All those human resources are built into those norms so that we standardize the resourcing of inclusive education across the provinces because of the existing disparities in terms of how the policy is being resourced. So it's one way of standardizing the training. And then in terms of the community centers, in response to the Western Cape court order, government broadly has actually come together, government departments came together and constituted a forum, an interdepartmental forum. And that is the forum that's made up of Department of Transport. I can name all the different departments because each department has a role of providing services to children with severe to profound profound disabilities. And that forum is ongoing. It has put a plan in place in terms of how we can provide access to services. Our focus is basic education. Is in keeping with our mandate, and that is of providing education. And for that reason, we've developed a policy framework in terms of how we are going to respond to providing services, which also guides even in other provinces, in other government departments in terms of what their roles should be in the process. So something is being done in that regard. Honorable person about the fetal alcohol syndrome, it's a serious challenge, almost like autism is a challenge for basic education in terms of access to education. It's been noted. We need to come up with strategies. Like, for instance, if I could make an example of autism, our approach has been that special schools need to create a unit for autism. So that learners will be admitted to special schools, so that we increase their access to education. And the same strategies and innovations need to be put into effect to address the issue of fetal alcohol syndrome. Unfortunately, in the Northern Cape, I think in the Northern Cape, it happens to be almost the capital in the world, not only in South Africa, but I think Northern Cape is the capital of fetal alcohol syndrome in the world. So it's a very daunting challenge, and that's what we are also trying to deal with and build capacity. And we believe that some of the strategies could begin to alleviate the pressure from teachers who are confronted with this. For instance, the issue of differentiated teaching and assessment. We want to believe that is going to go a long way. For instance, providing augmentative and alternative communication devices, the AAC, because they also address the issue of children with language development problems. So this is an integrated approach to respond to the challenge. But we are doing something. We have not won the war yet, but at least we are beginning to see what we are doing with the battles. Honorable Mukoto, the issue about the designation of full service schools, in terms of who does that, what is it based on, etc. Basic education developed a set of guidelines, and we've taken those guidelines to all provincial departments, because those guidelines are spelling out the criteria that provincial departments need to follow before they can designate a mainstream school to a full service school. And of course, that is coming, that is followed by capacity building on the school. It's not a question of saying, from today you are a full service school, and then we'll walk away from the school. What we do is we follow up with workshops, training on inclusion to understand inclusion first, so that we influence the change of attitudes, because the attitudes are the key thing, especially from the teaching cadre. I think from Honorable Van der Vaals, it was more a question of, you know, giving guidance and giving advice to basic education in the main. We take those as comments, and I think they are actually empowering and strengthening some of our strategies that we are looking into. For instance, the use of ICT for certain disabilities, the use of iPad, as Honorable Van der Vaals has mentioned. About the selection of companies during tendering processes, I'm going to leave that for my colleague. Mr. Subban, I'm sure he's the place to address that. Or he was already explained. Anyway. The distribution of special schools, Honorable Chair, well, it's still a challenge. But I must say that between 2012 and 2014, we had 25 new special schools that were developed across, that were built across provinces. I know that KZN actually, out of the 25, KZN built 5 new special schools in that period between 2012 and 2014. And Gauteng, beginning of this year, 2016, has designated underutilized schools to become special schools. And the number that they have already designated and officially opened by the MEC in Gauteng is 18 additional special schools just in 2016 alone. So there is progress that is being made in that regard. But we are also mindful of the fact that building more and more special schools is not actually a solution, it's not an answer to getting inclusion right. In fact, the focus should be mainstreaming support and taking even mainstreaming disabilities in line with the UN Convention. And that is why we have this agenda of designating full service schools and building capacity. I must say that maybe in response to Section 27 about White Paper 6 and in terms of how far we are from where we started with White Paper 6, if we look at the vision of White Paper 6, when it comes to designating mainstream schools and making them inclusive schools, it had set a target of 500 schools in a period of 20 years. So in other words, it is expected from White Paper 6 that by 2021, we should have designated 500 schools to become full service schools. But by 2014, we are already close to have designated about 800. We have already exceeded the target that is set within White Paper 6. So again, this is an indication that we are doing something, we are making progress as basic education, because we've already exceeded the 20-year target from White Paper 6. DG has addressed the issue of the status of White Paper 6 as a policy. I know that from the general public, the issue is it being a white paper, that is a challenge. But in order to strengthen its implementation, DBE has taken a decision and started setting a process of developing regulations, because regulations will have more teeth than a policy, even when this is challenged in a court of law. I think basically those would be the responses. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, representatives of the
with pioneer printers and with various departments, because it is, at this point in time, Pioneer Printers is the organization or institution that is printing for us in Braille. The tender, which has already been responded to, having worked with Pioneer Printers, we looked at them and being provided for in terms of the labor by the WCED, the Western Cape Education Department, and some of the labor costs are being incurred by them. But then we looked at how can we expand the capacity to provide textbooks at a faster rate. It then meant that we looked at Pioneer Printers and increasing their capacity. But of course that involves engaging with government printing workers who are under Home Affairs. And then it is public works who are the custodians of government assets. And also with the Department of Arts and Culture in terms of increasing capacity at Pioneer Princess. So we've had four meetings already, Chair and members, with the WCED, Government Printing Works, and Pioneer Princess to ensure that we move towards the process of increasing capacity in the country for Braille production. But having said that, you know, we see IT and ICT and Braille. We cannot do without Braille, but we see them being in the system or in the sector and occupying a space that is side by side. And therefore, we are looking at alternative solutions so that we can ensure that all learners that are visually impaired have the necessary access to the LTSM. On the issue of the publishers, we've engaged with them on several accounts, and they were at the very outset willing to make the materials accessible for ICT. And what is the issue? The issue at hand is the issue of the master copies for Braille, which is extremely costly. We then engaged with the provinces and looked at a model where we can share the cost of the master copies amongst provinces. But with competing priorities, even in the inclusive education space, even that sharing of the master copies has become expensive. And so we have engaged with publishers. And recently we held a symposium with the entire publishing industry, together with other stakeholders. And
so many things that have been raised. We as a portfolio committee, I think we have been armed even more when it comes to the issues of special education and children for service schools and so on. And with the inputs and the presentations that we have got from all the organizations that are here, we are going to be consolidating everything and coming up with the minutes and the report of anything that we need. Though, notwithstanding the fact that I hate the way DD has raised it, it's nice to get the inputs and all the ideas from various organizations. But, and we also appreciate that in the recommendations, like the recommendations that we have received from Section 27, though some of them slow more and it was not from slow more, it was from Section 27, let me say, so Section 27, they were more instructional than the recommendations. Yes, as I say, we're taking everything, we're looking at them, but I want to assure you that most of the things that you have received, everything would put into, it will be considered. But the fact of the matter, as you are saying, we are also an organization ourselves. We are parliament, public representative. Our doors are always open for whatever that you want to share with us. Your ideas, your inputs, your questions. Use our office to get that through. But at the same time, we also have our own program and, you know, the way that we are functioning. We have taken your comments, but I just want you to highlight Section 27 as to say, I don't think it's proper if they can strictly come with the to-dos to the portfolio committee. Yes, we appreciate your input, but to put it clearly as to say, this is what you need to do, you know, it needs to come and incorporate with what you are working and get the ideas that you are coming from. But it was a very open meeting and we appreciate all the comments that have been made. And what as the committee we can assure you about is that the issues of inclusive education, the issues of the special education has always formed a very important part of our program. And with what we have started today, coming together under one roof with everyone, let me not say everyone, with people that are concerned and have an interest in this, this is not just an event that has happened just for today. It's a journey where we'll now and again come back. As I'm saying, it might not be very soon that we come together under one roof like this, but our doors are always open. If ever you have something that you want to say to the committee, feel free to write to the committee, feel free to forward your submissions. As public representatives, we are here. We are always going to be engaging the department. There are so many things that we need to take forward and make sure that we watch and we look at the progress, like this issue of the CS policy that is instrumental moving forward to 2018. We had to check on and or as to say, is it well implemented? Our teachers trained, our communities knowing what to do and moving forward. And that is the promise that you are making as a committee. Forms part of our duty, and we are going to be carrying that well enough. This is part of one of the things that we are very interested in as a committee. As I'm saying, honourable members, I know when I'm looking at the time, it's already going to 1:30. At 2:00, we're expected to be in the house in chamber. Let us close this meeting for today. We're still going to get under engagement.